This is Lisa. She's a science communicator and the producer of the Tomorrow Space podcast. And she's here to tell us all about astronauts in space.
Hello everyone, lovely to be here today. So, I'm going to talk to you about what it's really like to live in space. Now, you're probably thinking, who is this girl in this strange space suit? Must be a bit of a crazy space nerd. But I actually make YouTube videos for a channel called Tomorrow. They're called Space Pods, and you can find them at youtube.com/TMRO. I'm also a graduate of International Space University, and I completed their Southern Hemisphere Space Studies program in January, February of this year. And most importantly, I'm also figuring out how to grow plants on Mars, and I'll be delivering this paper at the International Astronautical Congress in September in Mexico. So, who here wants to be an astronaut? Hands up. Oh, come on, there has to be more than that, surely. Why are you here? Okay, so I want to be an astronaut too, right? I mean, it's a pretty cool job, isn't it? You get to do lots of really cool things like doing underwater diving with scuba tanks so that you can feel what it's like to be weightless in microgravity. And you get to go to space. How cool is that? But you can also become a professional gymnast and in as little as a few days, just as Tim Peake here is going to demonstrate. Now, I might get you guys to help me count here how many somersaults he does. Ready? If I can play the video.
Really fast from my point of
okay,
view.
Okay, one, but, two,
I mean, I'm
three,
seeing the world with
four,
really
five,
quickly.
Six,
and I'm starting
seven,
to feel the
increased
pressure on my head now. 10, 11, 12, 13,
14. Basically, he just keeps on going forever, right? So, my next question to you guys is, how many people do you think are in space right now?
100?
Oh my goodness, where would you put them all? Any other guesses? Yeah? Six. That's a very good guess. 500? Oh, wow. Three. So the answer is three. You were very close with six. So do you guys know where in space those three people are right now? Yeah? In the blue? International Space Station. Fantastic. So right now, there are currently three people on the International Space Station. Now, usually there are six, you're exactly right, but the next crew of three people are launching on July 7th, and there's actually a woman on that crew. Fantastic, because apparently one out of six in a crew is enough women, apparently. Hopefully we can change that in the future, but that's another talk for another day. So the International Space Station cost about $100 billion to complete, and it has the living area of the size of a five-bedroom house. Five-bedroom house, six people, that sounds pretty good, right? I think so. But the thing with the space station is, some of those parts have been up there since 1998. That means that some parts of the International Space Station are 18 years old. Now think about that for a second, guys. International Space Station, with people up there for maybe 18 years, well, humans probably 16 years, but there's no windows on the International Space Station so you can just crack open a window and get a breath of fresh air. So you know what that means? It means the International Space Station smells like sweaty men. So not everything about being in space is so glamorous, right? So what about the realities? What is it really like to live in space? So I'm going to tell you guys the good and the bad. And to do that, I'm going to be going through some of the most popular questions asked to astronauts about their life in space. So the number one question about living in space, what do you guys think it is?
What do you feel like living in space?
That's a good question. But what do you guys really want to know about living in space? Come on. Yeah?
How does it feel?
How does it feel? What about, how do you go to the toilet in space? Who wants to know that? Yeah. So going to the toilet in space is a little bit different, just a tiny little bit different than going to the toilet here on Earth. So, number ones, if you want to go number one in space, actually it's not too difficult. There's a system of pipes that are joined together, and conveniently, the nozzle of those pipes is color-coded yellow so you don't get mixed up on where to put it. That's important. So what you do is you flick a switch that's next to that yellow cup, and it turns on a system of fans to create some suction or vacuum to make all the stuff go where it's supposed to go and not where it's not supposed to go. Because things like to float around in microgravity and it could get a little bit messy, right? So you have the hose, you have the suction, and I'm sure you guys can figure out where to put that yellow hose. And if not, maybe this isn't the right talk for you guys. So what about if you want to go number twos? Well, things get a little bit more difficult. So the first thing to do, just like astronaut Samantha Christopher Reddy is showing you there, she's holding on to a plastic bag. Now, where that plastic bag goes is just behind her. You see there's a small little contraption. It looks nothing like a toilet here on Earth. And what you do is you put that plastic bag in the hole there to make sure everything's nicely covered. And then you have to position yourself onto that toilet seat. The problem here, guys, is that you can't actually sit in microgravity, so you have to strap yourself in and enjoy the ride. Now, you have to make sure that you sit in exactly the correct position, because the hole there, as you can see, is actually not that big. So just for some comparison there, there's some M&Ms showing you the hole that the stuff has to go into. So astronauts actually practice this. During their training, a part of their training is to sit on a practice toilet that actually has a camera beneath that hole there with a screen so that you can practice getting a good seal. Very important, guys. A lot of money is spent on this training. Now, the other thing to worry about going number twos in space, things don't fall like they do here on Earth. So to finish the job, astronaut Clay Anderson used to tell me that his favourite way to finish the job is to put on a glove and use a pair of human scissors. Not everything in space is so glamorous, guys. All right, so that was pretty gross. I'm really sorry if you just had lunch. But what about the work in space, okay? So you wake up on the space station, and then you have to go straight to work. But you don't have to worry about an hour of commuting to and from work. I suppose for some of us that could be a good thing, and for some of us that's a bad thing. But what kind of work do the people do on the International Space Station? Well, they do science, of course. That's the whole point for having the International Space Station. We have to do some science. One of my favourite science experiments that they have on the International Space Station helps people down here on Earth. In fact, this piece of science helps people with Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. Now, unfortunately, my slides have gone a little bit messed up here, but that's fine. So, in microgravity, you can grow protein crystals better than you can here on Earth. You can see those two pictures up there. The top one is of protein crystals grown in space. They look pretty big, they look clear, they look pretty good to me. The ones on the bottom there are protein crystals grown here on Earth. So they look really dirty and they're kind of smaller than the ones grown in space. But, okay, cool, they look pretty, they're nice crystals, what's the point? Well, if we can grow protein crystals in space, then we can X-ray them to find out the 3D structure of that protein. Well, why is that important? Well, with the 3D structure of a protein, think of it like a lock and a key. If we know the structure of the protein, then we can know the shape of that lock. Once you know the shape of that lock, you can make a key to fit that lock. Why is that important? Well, in Duchenne's muscular dystrophy, there's a particular protein that people that have the disease have a really high level of. And if we knew the structure, then we could make specialized designer drugs to be a new treatment for that disease. And that's exactly what we did by doing this science on the International Space Station to help people with Duchenne's muscular dystrophy here on Earth. But that's not the only job of astronauts. They don't just do science. They inspire kids. Now, there's a lot of different things going on station that kids can get involved in, but due to time, we're only going to talk about two of them. So the first one is called ARIS, or Amateur Radio on the International Space Station. Schools can talk to astronauts in space. Kids can ask their questions to astronauts in space. How cool is that? Hands up if any kids here want to talk to astronauts. Pretty much all of you. That's amazing. So what your school can do, how they can get involved, is they can contact the ARIS coordinator in their state or in their country, because we're Any kids around the world can do this. It's not just a thing for the US. So your school can either call the astronauts directly, but that takes a lot of different radio equipment, and it's kind of expensive, and you need to actually know how to run that. But the second thing that you can do is you can just simply use a telephone connection to call what we call a telebridge operator. Now, that's the person that has all the radio stuff, and they know what they're doing. So, as the International Space Station flies over the telebridge operator, and there's one in South Australia, a really, really nice guy called Tony Hutchinson, he calls the station, and you call him, and then he connects the two of you. Simple, easy, and I think every school in Australia should probably get involved. The second thing that schools can do is something called story time from space. So here's a picture of Tim Peake up here, the British astronaut who only just recently came back down to Earth, and he's reading a storybook, and kids in their classrooms can read the exact same storybook, and the astronauts in space can do pretty much a Skype call down to their classroom, and you guys can be reading the books at the same time. How cool is that? I wish we had that when I was in school. All right, but down to the really important things. How do astronauts exercise in space? What kind of exercises do you think the astronauts do? Yeah, up there in the green?
They actually sometimes do it on the side.
On the side? Oh, that'd be interesting. Oh, so they run on the side of the space station. Very clever. What do you think they do?
They lift weights.
They lift weights. Oh, that's interesting. How can you lift weights in space when everything's weightless? We might come to that. So how do you exercise in space? You've got a few choices. You can go cycling. There's a cycling machine up in space, and it looks like that. It's pretty cool. But you don't just have to go cycling. You can go running. And just like you said, they have a treadmill that sort of looks like it's on the wall of the International Space Station. But the cool thing about the space station is there's no kind of walls or floor or roof, because when you're in space, you can use all of those things. So they can all become useful surfaces for you to do your work on. But just like you guys said over there, you can lift weights in space. Wait a minute. Space is weightless. How do you lift weights? Well, some really, really cool engineers figured out that you can pull against a vacuum, and that pulling force makes resistance to your muscles. And that resistance is what builds your muscles up or keeps them strong. So that machine is called ARED, or the Advanced Resistive Exercise Device, and it looks a little something like that. Now, my next question about spaceflight is kind of, well, really important to me. Why do astronauts grow taller in space? I think you guys can see why that's an important question for me. Oh, you know why? Why do you think they grow taller? Very clever. So, there actually is gravity in space, but it's not pushing their spine down anymore. Just like you explained, gravity usually pushes people's spines down. So, it's holding their spine in a position like this. But when the gravity isn't pushing their spine down anymore, their spine is free to lengthen. Probably not as much as this slinky, only by about 1 or 2 inches or so. But hey, I could use a few more inches of height. But the really worrying thing about astronauts that happens to them in space, well, to me anyway, is something happens to their eyes. So what happens to astronauts' eyes in space? Does anyone know? Yeah? They change different colours. That would be cool, wouldn't it? Unfortunately, I don't think they change colours in space, though. What about you, right at the back?
When they come back to Earth, maybe they're blind?
Maybe they're blind. You are on exactly the right track. So, when astronauts go to space, there is the potential for them to get permanent eye damage. Even when they come back to Earth from space, their eyes don't get fixed. They get a lot of symptoms, so their optic nerve behind their eyes swells up, and they get swelling in the optic disc, and their eyeball gets a kind of squished-in shape. Now, why does that happen? Well, it's because the pressure of the fluid inside their head actually gets higher or increased. They get more pressure on the inside of their head. And that happens because of something called fluid shift. Now, the best way to demonstrate fluid shift is just to show you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about fluid shift while upside down. And to do that, I'm going to be doing a handstand, which means I probably shouldn't have just had Mexican food like half an hour ago. But anyway, hopefully this won't end messy. So guys, I'm going to talk to you about fluid shift. So what I want you guys to do is watch the changes that happen to my face, the shape and the color as I'm saying this. So fluid shift happens because when we're on Earth, gravity is usually pushing down the fluid in our bodies towards our legs. Now in space, that fluid is free to shift back up to your head and chest. The extra fluid in your chest makes your body think that it's drowning, so it causes you to stop drinking and to pee more, which is always fun in space. And the second thing it does is the fluid in your head increases your intracranial pressure, the pressure inside your head, and makes you have those vision problems like you had in space, like we saw before. The other thing is that it causes you to have really bad congestion in your sinus, like you have a perpetual cold. And to demonstrate what it feels like to have fluid stuck in your sinuses, we're going to do a bit of an audience interaction. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, how does my face look? Is it red? Okay, I have a massive headache right now. I feel a little bit dizzy, but that's fine. Totally fine. I'll be fine. And is my face really red and puffy? Did you notice that it was getting really hard for me to talk near the end there? Yeah. So that's all the fluid that was coming to my head. Now, I just mentioned that we're going to have some audience participation. So can I get 5 people from the audience to come and join me here? So, yeah, 1... in the stripy shirt up there, yep, 2. Up there with the black, 3. Yeah, you can come. You're really excited, aren't you? Come on forward. How many have I got there? 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's go in the pink. Yep. Is that 5? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All right. Hello, everyone. Now, are any of you guys allergic to chocolate?
No.
No? Parents? I just want to double check. No, none of the kids here are allergic to chocolate?
No.
All right, fantastic. So can everyone take one of these? Don't eat them just yet. All right, guys, and can you face our audience for us? Okay, there you go. Hold on to that. Okay, now can you all face the audience? And can you guys please taste one of those chocolates for me? Tell me how it tastes. Promise they're not poisoned. That'd be too much paperwork. So how do they taste, guys? Sweet. They just taste like chocolate, right? Yeah, delicious. They don't taste like chocolate? Oh, okay. Well, what I need you to do now...
I'm not chewing, I'm sucking.
Oh, okay, that's all right. You're allowed to chew them if you want. But now what I want you guys to do is to pinch your nose and then eat the other chocolate. Can you guys do that for me? Oh, did you already eat both your chocolates? Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay, guys, how does the chocolate taste this time? How does it taste? It tastes weird. All right, and what do you guys think? It still tastes like chocolate. Does it taste exactly the same?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, okay. And how do you think it tastes?
It just
tastes different. And what do you think? Does it
like
taste
chocolate.
Different? Like chocolate. Oh, wow. Can everyone give my helpers a round of applause? All right, my helpers. Now, before you go, I have one more thing for you guys to do. So I have an example of something that doesn't taste, well... maybe it doesn't taste different when you're pinching your nose. So what I have here for the second part of our experiment is I have hot sauce. Do I have any volunteers to taste the hot sauce for me? Oh, are you sure? It might be a little bit hot.
Yeah.
All right. I'll give you a little tiny, itty little tiny bit. Is that okay, parents?
Yeah.
So it helps if you open the packet.
I want to vote.
Okay, we're going to give you a tiny little itty-bitty bit because...
I like chili.
You like chili? Oh, okay, that's probably good. Oh, that wasn't a little bit. Okay, how about you dip your finger in there? There you go. Oh, you had a lot. Okay. Okay, now does that taste chili? Yeah? All right, now what we're going to do... Oh, dear. You're getting a bit, little bit of a red face there, sweetie. Oh, dear. All right. I don't want to make you get a little bit too sick, so that's enough chili for now. Good job, though. Everyone give my friend a round of applause. Very good. Oh, it's really hot, isn't it? Oh, dear. We should get you some water. Can we get some water for this little boy here? Thank you, guys. All right, you guys can come and take a seat. Fantastic job. What a brave boy. Another round of applause. That was fantastic. So, ladies and gentlemen, the thing we're trying to demonstrate there is that things like chocolate don't taste very good in microgravity because of all that fluid stuck in your head. But things like chili, they aren't bothered by the fluid stuck in your head in microgravity. In fact, they're actually pretty good at clearing the fluid, like our little helper over there has just experienced. So astronauts like to eat foods with a lot of chili. Now, that's not the only kinds of foods that astronauts like to eat, guys. So what do astronauts really like to eat in space? Well, to show you, I'm going to show you some actual astronaut food. This was sent to me by NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas. With space food, you want to make sure that it has a really long shelf life because there's the odd chance that your resupply vehicle will blow up. In fact, from the middle of 2014 to the middle of 2015, 40%, over 40% of ISS resupply vehicles actually blew up. Yeah. So you want to make sure your food has a good shelf life in case those resupply trucks don't make it. To do that, you can do something called thermostabilization. That's using heat and pressure to make sure your food doesn't have any microbes in it that will make it go off. And that's what this food here, a packet of black beans, is. It's been sterilized with heat and pressure. The other thing you can do is you can dehydrate the food. So by dehydrating it, you're taking out any water so that any bacteria, microbes, yeast, anything won't grow inside of it. The other reason we do that, high five, buddy, great job. Fantastic. Go take a seat. Good job, you're fantastic. So brave, I wouldn't have done that if that was me. So the other thing you'd get by dehydrating your food is that you, by taking out all that water, you're taking down the weight of that food. And that's really important because it's so expensive per kilo to send something into space. So we have some chicken and pineapple salad. Delicious, right? And we have some strawberries. And all the astronauts have to do is inject water into the top here to rehydrate their food. Now, I don't know what rehydrated lettuce tastes like. I probably wouldn't want to eat it, to be honest. Now, the other thing you can do is some foods don't need any treatment to go to space. We have a granola bar here, and we have some crackers. And the M&Ms that you've seen on the screen before, they're natural too. They're in their natural form. Now, for drinks, again, you want to save weight. So these are powdered drinks here. This one is a coffee with cream. You just inject water up the top there. Fun fact. Remember our method for dealing with number ones in space? That hose contraption with the fans. Where do you guys think that water goes?
Into space.
Into space. What do you think?
Back into their drinking water.
That's exactly right. So they have a saying on the International Space Station that yesterday's coffee becomes today's coffee. Recycling at its finest, guys. Okay, so we've learnt about what astronauts eat and drink in space. But what about in the future? So in the International Space Station, the veggie system, or the vegetable production system, is used for astronauts to become space gardeners. They've grown two crops of lettuce, and they've even eaten one of those crops of lettuce. You can see Scott Kelly and Cho Lindgren up there eating lettuce that they've grown in space, which is probably better than that rehydrated stuff in that packet. Now, the other thing they've grown in space are flowers, zinnia flowers, and by next year they should have grown Chinese cabbage and eaten that too. And what about if we go to Mars? I mean, according to the Martian, we should grow potatoes, right? Well, we could grow potatoes on Mars, but what are we going to do for protein? We can't take cows and pigs with us. They weigh too much. How are we going to get our protein on Mars? Insects, yeah. We could have insects on Mars. Who would eat an insect? I would. And in fact, do we have any adults in the audience that would like to try some very fancy deep-fried crickets with chili and garlic? Yeah, up there? Come on forward. So you can buy these deep-fried insects online at ediblebugshop.com. I've actually eaten them. They're actually not that bad. And I would totally eat these on Mars. Exactly right.
The Middle East eats insects.
Yep, so a huge proportion of our world eats insects as part of their diet. And of course you can have three.
Well, they're laughing and they're going to have some.
A whole family taste test. What was your name?
Danusha.
So Danusha here is going to eat some crickets. Here you go, Danusha.
I've eaten insects before.
Okay, here we go. Oh, I can hear it crunching them.
It's nice.
So what do they taste like? Yeah, of course.
They taste like junk food, so I reckon most of you would like them.
Oh, did you hear that? They taste like junk food. You should all start eating them.
Because they're crunchy like chippies.
So to me, they taste like... Have you guys seen the really, really brown chips that are... Thank you very much, Danusha. Everyone give a round of applause to Danusha. So to me, the crickets just taste like really, really burnt chips, the really, really brown ones you find at the end of the chip packet. Okay, guys, so we've learned that astronauts have to use a vacuum suction-powered space toilet. They have to work where they live. They have to suffer potential permanent eye damage and lengthening of their spine that causes their muscles to start aching, and drink rehydrated water and potentially insects in the future. So tell me now, guys, who still wants to be an astronaut? Really? I think that's a little bit less than what we started with. But you know what? I do too. Thank you, everyone. My name is Lisa Stojanovsky, and that's what it's really like to live in space.